Hi, I'm Sammy Sue, and I started this podcast with the hope to interview hair industry creatives and bring local hairstylists together to explore the endless possibilities of this craft. On this podcast, I will be discussing my decade-long journey as a cosmetologist, how sobriety and the power of positive thinking changed my life, share advice on growing your clientele, finding a healthy work-life balance, and how to access continuing education. I am so grateful to connect with other amazing hair artists and go on this new journey with you. So put down your shears, turn up the volume, and let's get into it. Welcome to Sammy Sue Loves Your Hair, the podcast. Hello, friends, and welcome back. I'm your host, Sammy Sue, and I am so excited to have Sarai Spear, aka at the Platinum Giraffe, on the show as my flagship guest interview. With more than 15 years in the industry, she has been on the Look All-Stars TV show. Her work has been featured in multiple industry publications. Her ghosted hair and Whoville cutting technique were both viral sensations. She is the creative director and lead educator for Trionics, an Olaplex advocate, a search and rescue denim sponsored artist, and was recently named a 2019 Modern Salon Top 100 stylist. Sarai is very open about her struggles with drug and alcohol addiction, her absolute rock bottom, and how her true calling, her love of hair, keeps her challenged, motivated, and sober. Now she lives to motivate, inspire, and empower others by sharing her passion and talent through educating, both in person and online. She recently opened her own beautiful suite at Tranquility Salon Suites in the suburbs of Kansas City, where she can be found creating beautiful hair art, as well as filming for her brand new online Instagram community at Blonding Crew. Buckle up, friends, because we get into everything from color correcting to sobriety and being vulnerable on social media. We laughed, we shed a few tears, and we swore a lot. Hello, Sarai.
Hello, friend.
How are you today?
I am awesome. How are you, Miss Samasu?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much again for being part of my very first interview podcast. I am so grateful to have you here.
I am honored to be your first. This is so exciting.
Awesome. So I just want to jump right in. What do you love about doing hair?
Oh man, you weren't kidding. You're jumping in. I'm glad you didn't say, you know, give me one word or a sentence, because I think there's so much that I love about the hair. I think what keeps me coming back, even on those really bad days where, you know, a color correction didn't go the way you thought it should, or, you know, whatever, the power that we have to help people look and feel beautiful. That is such a, I call it like a superpower. I mean, that's like, that's better than any drug I've ever done. That like high, knowing that you had some small impact on the way somebody felt, or the way somebody looked, the way other people looked at them. Like that's a pretty awesome feeling.
I could not agree more. I 100% feel that when you turn that client around in the chair and they first look at themselves and they have that big smile, well, it's kind of hard to see masks now, but
right.
But you can see the smiles, right?
Yes.
There's nothing quite like that. That is 100% why I keep coming back too. So I love that we have that in common. So cool. Did you always know you wanted to do hair?
Oh my God, no. I was not that girl like in high school doing everybody's hair for prom I played a ton of sports in high school, and I played softball, and on the away games, we would always do like a braid train, and we would always, you know, like literally the entire bus, we're all just braiding each other. I always had to be the very first one because I couldn't even braid hair. It was literally so embarrassing. I did not know how to three strand French braid, none of that. So no, it's I didn't grow up with any hairstylists in the family, no barbers, no nothing like that. I was kind of lost, to be honest. I went to X-ray tech school out of high school. I married my high school sweetheart, and that was a joke and a disaster. And I went to X-ray school, and I'm just going to tell you a funny story because this is disgusting, but this is how I knew, like, I just wasn't meant for like the real world, as I call it.
Sure.
So I'm about a year and a half into this program. It's a 2-year program, and I was doing clinicals and I was working as a student tech on the weekends. And I got called to do a portable abdomen X-ray with my partner, and they said it was like a bowel obstruction. And I'm like, okay, cool, got this. The dude, we tried to move him to put like the cassette thing under him, and the dude puked his own feces.
Oh
Girl, I did not even know that was a fucking thing.
no. And you were like, I'm out.
Oh, literally, I vomited in the room. I went out into the hallway. I vomited in a trash can. I had feces puke on me and I fucking walked out. I left my scrubs in the fucking trash and I never went back. I was like, nope.
Yep.
Nope, this is not for me. So then I decided I would go to college because that's what everybody does, right? It's like you go to college. And I switched majors about 93 times and kept just bouncing. I mean, I was accounting, I was psychology, I was criminal justice, you name it. I was like, I'm gonna major in this. I couldn't find my bearings, you know, nothing was clicking for me. So at the age of 24, I was kind of feeling like a bit of a failure. I was like managing a tanning salon. I had managed restaurants and just, you know, kind of floating around. And at the time I was like, bitch, you need to figure your fucking life out. So my two options, I kind of narrowed it down for myself. My husband at the time said, I think you'd be really good in real estate. Now, mind you, if you've ever seen me, I am 6 foot tall. I am covered from head to toe. I have throat tattoos. So this was pre-tattoo. And I thought, you know what? Real estate might be kind of cool. And I was like, you know what? Actually be way cool. It's fucking hair school. Because I had always done, you know, funky stuff with my hair. And I thought, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I'm gonna go to hair school. And if I like it, awesome. If I don't, at least I can do my hair, my friend's hair. And I'm telling you what, the first day I walked in to that beauty school, I was like, these are my fucking people.
Yes.
And
Yes.
I was so freaking happy. And I honestly had no idea when I started hair 15 years ago, I would, you know, I would be where I am. But something about the creativity and people, like just the beauty industry is such a, God, it's such a buzzy feeling sometimes. And, you know, everybody getting together to create something. And I had such a great beauty school experience too. I didn't have all the, you know, backstabbing, backbiting. I didn't have any of that. But I was also 24 when I went. So I was a little bit older. And I just basically, I was like, I don't have time for this fucking shit. Like, I'm paying a lot of money. I'm here to learn and I want to do a job. So I honestly, I guess I kind of fell into it. I think I had no idea though, no idea. Over the next 15 years, what would happen though?
Right, how could you? I love that you went to school when you were 24. That's actually the same age that I decided to go to cosmetology
Shut
school.
up.
Yeah.
It's nice because, you know, you've got a little bit of life experience under your belt. You're not that super young, naive, fresh out of high school human, you know, and you're like, okay, like I'm in my early mid 20s. I gotta figure shit out. And it's like, you pay attention in school, you know, it I just think it holds a little bit more value as opposed to just going right out of high school because you don't know who the fuck you are in high school. Shit, I'm 40 and I'm just now figuring out who I am, you
Okay.
know?
I barely knew who I was at 24.
Right.
I'm 34 now. And like you, I'm really starting to just know confidently who I am and what I want and what I'm about. So I love that we have that in common as well. That's so cool.
Awesome. I love it.
So talk to me a little bit about your experience in becoming the color correction queen. That's what I see the most from you on social media. You really have just dove in to these insane color corrections. So tell me a little bit about how you got your education in doing that. And what advice would you give to somebody who wants to go in that direction in this profession?
Well, first thing is advice I would give to someone wanting to get into color corrections is you have to have a thick skin and you have to be willing to fail. You have
Say that again.
You have to be willing to fail.
Yes.
And I say that because it's one thing to sit in a class and learn or to take a class online or read things in books and put that knowledge to use. It's another thing when you think you know something and you fuck up so royally that you want to throw in the towel. And I'm sure, CMSU, you have probably felt that as well. That moment of like, fuck, why am I doing here? I quit.
Preach.
Yeah. So just know if you want to get into color corrections, you will fail. But it's in those learning experiences or failures, if you want to call it that. It's in those learning experiences that you dig deep and you step back and you go, okay, so obviously this didn't work. How do I do better next time? And mm-hmm. So that is where you really build your foundation, is from mistakes, from screwing up. And that's a tough pill for people to swallow because nobody wants an unhappy client. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to disappoint somebody, right? And so
we're all so empathetic
to
clients, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the reason most of us got into hair is because we're, at our core, we're people pleasers. Mm-hmm. We love people, even though they drive us crazy, and we want to help people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you screw up so bad or you fail, it's a hard thing to come back from. So you have to have a thick skin. And you have to take all of those moments as learning experiences and build on them. Because I'll tell you, like, I never set out to do color corrections or become this, you know, blonding queen. In all honesty, the first like 10 or 11 years of my career, I call it practice. I wasn't present. I was not sober. Mm. I struggled with drugs and alcohol. I was a coke addict, a meth addict. I ended up being a homeless junkie. I struggled with alcohol addiction until 5 years ago. So I didn't take my career seriously. And when I got sober, I really took a hard look at my life. And I was, to be cliche, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember saying to myself the day I got sober, I am going to do things differently. What I'm doing is not working. I am fucking miserable. Mm-hmm. And so I really made that sort of my core mantra. And I brought that into work. So when I got sober, we addicts like to do what we call addiction transfer. And I threw myself into work, meaning I would literally take the nastiest, gnarliest color corrections. I'm like, oh, you're boxed black for 20 years and you want to be silver? Fuck yeah, let's do this.
Let's go.
yo, I did not have a clue what I was doing. Not a clue. But I started taking classes. And I took all kinds of classes. I took like the, they used to have like the $25 like L'Oreal classes or whatever at SalonCentric or State. I ended up going to education because I thought this is what I was lacking. So I don't know how to do certain things. I want to do certain things. And one of the biggest things was color corrections. I have not a fucking clue where to start. And blonding. I give you highlights. Girl, listen, for the first 10 years of my career, I did the same fucking mohawk foil pattern that we learned in beauty school. Okay. I was so stuck and so stagnant. And so I took classes so that I could get out of that and I could learn. And, huh?
And get inspired, right? Through education.
Oh my God, absolutely. Because it's like just the buzz, if you've never taken, an independent education class, I highly suggest you do because independent education is absolutely amazing. There's nothing wrong with corporate education, but there's something about that independent education where you walk away, you make connections with not only the educator, but the people who have come to that class. They're so like-minded, they're so hungry. And it's like you feed off of that energy, you make friendships, and you walk away feeling like, you know what? Fuck yeah, I can do this.
And especially now with social media, I feel like one-on-one education, or like you said, independent education is so easily accessible now. And then, like you said, also being with other people, like-minded people that go to those classes, it's so easy to stay in touch.
Absolutely. I love, honestly, so as an educator, I travel across the country and I teach my classes, and I am dead serious when I tell you I learn something every time I teach. Whether it is somebody told me about a new product or somebody said, "Hey, when this happens, I do this." And just like being able to take that information in, have a supportive group of humans that you can share that information with and be inspired. But like my favorite thing of all of these classes, it's not the final product. It's not this beautiful makeover that I do. It's the connections. It's the connections that I make with people who come to my class, who we stay in touch. It is the connections that other people make. And nothing makes my heart happier when I see people leave my class and then they're collabing with somebody they met in class, or I see them interacting with each other on Instagram or, on Facebook. And I'm just like, this is why I do what I do.
Yes.
I
Oh.
love that so much about teaching.
So cool. So speaking of social media, recently you have been very transparent about your posts about color corrections and the cost for the client, and also the cost of the overhead price for you to do these insane color corrections. And I guess a couple of questions on this. First of all, what inspired you to start creating posts like this? Was it more for clients' education or more for the stylist's education? And you talked a little bit about how people, and I don't know if these people, this is just through watching your Instagram stories, and like you did make a little post about it, about how some people are kind of hating on these posts and saying that your prices are, crazy expensive, but they're hating on your posts, you were saying out of fear. So elaborate a little bit on that. But first, I want to definitely talk about the transparency about like what you charge and what inspired you to do that.
So I feel like it's been lacking in our industry, and it's a weird secret. And I don't understand why. Like, we don't talk about pricing. It's like this hush hush, right? Like, what is so and so charging? Well, I don't know. I don't know. Why the fuck are we not talking about this? Honestly, like, people see these insane makeovers. And since social media came into the picture, expectations from both sides, the guests, clients, and the stylists, are absolutely fucking unrealistic. They see these before and after photos. But what the stylist isn't telling you is that was over two sessions, that was 16 hours of work total, that was $387 in product. That's the shit that no one fucking talks about. And I don't understand why. So I actually started, a couple reasons I started breaking this down. So I want to educate clients and guests about what these crazy Pinterest worthy looks take. I want to get into the nitty gritty of it. It took 2 hours to apply. It took, you know, hour to do this, 2 hours here. So why did it take me 8 fucking hours? Well, here you go. Right. And I also wanted to start a conversation with stylists. I want to challenge stylists. Do you know your operating cost of your business? If you don't, why the fuck not? You should. We are not a 501c, okay? We are not a not-for-profit organization, right? I don't know where this misconception of artists in general, oh, if you love something, you'll do it for free. How about fuck off? That never paid a bill. I mean, come on. Like, I can't call my electric company and be like, yo, I just created this masterpiece out of love. Can that pay my bill? But you still owe us $4.75, okay?
And 20 cents.
Exactly. So get to work, ho. No, so I've heard from my classes. In my classes, I break down, I've got a beautiful pricing formula that helps you. Not me, but you as the stylist, you plug your numbers in and it shows you what you are currently making, what you should be making. And 9 times out of 10, I can't tell you, Sammy Sue, people look at me and go, oh my fucking God, I am so undercharging. And I'm like, we have to do better as an industry. So I spent my New Year's Eve doing a makeover. And this girl had gone and gotten highlights, hated it, covered it with Sally's Ion, absolutely hated it. It was splotchy. It was crazy. And I was like, you know what? This is how I'm gonna ring in the new year, is I'm gonna do this massive color correction. And then I'm gonna break it the fuck down for people. And I was not really, I didn't think it would go as crazy as it has, to be really honest. I just wanted more transparency in this fucking industry. And it can be a really vicious, brutal, bullshit industry if you let it. But it can also be very wonderful and kind and uplifting and supportive and this beautiful community.
Absolutely.
So last year, Gina Bianca had done a post, and I think she got so much fucking hate for it. It was like this stripey ass color correction that she did. It looked like a calico kitten. And she made this beautiful color correction and she posted her price. And I'm pretty sure she got ripped a new asshole for it. And I thought, okay, well, that's cool. Like, we need to do more of that. And so then I took it a step further. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do video breakdowns. I have a master list, Sammy Sue, that I have created of all of my products. And I do use salon scale. I just started using it within the last couple of weeks. So when I say a master list, I have broken down every fucking product by hand, calculator, pen and paper. And I thought when I went to hair school, I wouldn't fucking have to do math, but that is a lie. I also thought I wouldn't have to do chemistry. That is a lie.
Yeah. If you run your own business. So yeah,
you're literally everything. Yeah. You have 27 hats to wear every day. So I went through and I created a product breakdown and I thought, okay, I'm just going to spell it out for people. Like, and I think one of the posts I did was like, you know, no, I cannot do this hair for $200. And my product cost was like $227 or something on that. So what I really hope with these product breakdowns is to challenge stylist. Okay, if I'm doing an 8 hour, 10 hour, 12 hour color correction and I'm charging them $300, first of all, 90% of that, if not all of that, is product cost. And I'm talking, I add foils, I add gloves, I do everything to the gram because I need to know what it costs me to run my business.
Yeah.
So if you're doing hair like that, these 8, 10, 12-hour makeovers for $300, $200, $400, when you break that down hourly, you might as well go work at Walmart or Target or McDonald's or Burger King. And I'm not slamming that, but you're
But it's
making basically $10 an hour, if that. That is disgusting for what we have paid to go to school and how much product we have to have, all the education that we pay for out of our pocket. Like, and there's such a gap in this industry. I heard a stat and it made me sick to my stomach. So the average cost of hair school is about, I think it's around $25,000 now. The average hairstylist makes between 23 and $28,000 a year. Yeah. What is the point of that? So 80% of the hairstylists make 20% of the money. 20% of the hairstylists make 80% of the money.
Wow, that's a pretty huge gap. I
It's
didn't know that statistic. That's huge.
disgusting, is what it is. And I think the reason is there's going to be a gap in any industry, right? You've always got your crème de la crème and then your people who are just squeaking by and doing the bare minimum. That's, every industry. But the disparity, the massive gap between that 20 and 80%, I want to help close that.
Sure.
There are seven, how many fucking people are on this earth? 8 billion, 7 billion?
Something like that, yeah.
There are not that many hairstylists, so there's plenty of heads of hair to go around.
Yeah.
So when we charge $300 for an 8, 12-hour makeover, we're not only hurting ourselves, we're hurting our coworker, we're hurting the salon down the street. We're hurting the salon the next county over because people will comparison shop and they'll be like, oh, well, they can do it for 200 or they can do it for 150. And we live in that space of fear. So if somebody says to me, okay, well, I can go get it done for $200, and especially if I'm a newer stylist or I'm not super confident in my skills, I'm going to say, okay, fine, I'll do it for 150. What you've just done there is you have told your clients that I don't matter. I don't like that because we break our bodies physically, mentally. We're therapists. We take on everybody's shit. Not only that, we are literally doing fucking chemistry on your fucking hair every day. We are breaking our bodies behind the chair. And you want to sit there and you want to make me feel invalidated and like I shouldn't be able to charge that much because so and so can do it for X amount. Abso-fucking-lutely not. You don't walk into Louis Vuitton and go, you know what? I really like that carry all. I know it's 1400, but I'll give you 500. They will look at you and be like, get the fuck out of here, bitch.
You can go buy a knockoff down the street.
Correct. And here's the thing. I get that people have budgets. I totally understand that. And there's a price point for everybody. But when we're undercutting and undercharging and not truly understanding our operating costs, what it costs to do business, then we as an industry are never going to close that gap. There's always going to be the haves and the have-nots. And so my point, hopefully, with these posts was to encourage stylists to start challenging their own pricing. You don't have to charge what I charge. You know, we're an industry that is widely unregulated when it comes to pricing. There's no set, you know, it has to be this for a haircut, or, you know, it depends on your skill level, your geographical location, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to challenge stylists to think, okay, I would have done this color correction for this much. What would my operating costs? You know what? I don't actually know what that is. Let me go figure that out. You know what? I should not be charging $60 an hour for this. I should be charging $75 an hour to make a profit. So I really wanted to challenge clients to see the bigger picture and to understand everything that we actually do that goes into it. And I wanted to challenge stylists to get out of their comfort zone.
Absolutely. Do you think that when stylists charge appropriately to be able to make a living, do you think that changes the perception of value to the client as well?
I absolutely think so. When you go to, let's say, like, I don't know, what is it? Like Sizzler, you know what I mean? Like that shitty cheap steakhouse, right? You go to Sizzler, you expect a $12.99 steak. Okay. There's nothing wrong with a $12.99 steak. But when you go to a fancy restaurant and you're paying $75 for a steak, you expect a $75 steak, right?
Right.
So I think a big thing that holds people back from charging their worth, charging appropriately, is fear. What are my clients going to think? Oh my God, I don't deserve that much money. Oh my God, my clients are going to think I'm ripping them off. Oh my God, who am I to have the right to charge $75 an hour? It's that fear. So as a client, I feel like if I go pay for a service and it's at the higher end, I expect a higher end product delivered.
Absolutely.
So if you are not educated, if you don't have the skills, if you don't have quality products, if you haven't invested in yourself and your education, and you're out there trying to charge those elevated prices, it's going to backfire on you. And then you'll end up with no clients. So I think knowing where you are in your skill level, and okay, so let's say, like, I charge for my color corrections, I charge $175 an hour. And by the end of the year, I'm going to be $200 an hour. 5 years ago, if you would have told me this, I would have literally looked at you and said, where is your crack pipe? Because you're smoking. Right. Exactly. I have invested over, and this is just a gross estimate, over $100,000 of my own money into my personal education. I have $22,300 worth of shears in my shear pack. I have $15,000 worth of color developer foils, everything I need to run my business, sitting in my cabinets at all times. I have invested in myself so that I can invest in my clients, and my clients will invest in me.
Oh, I love that. I think that is such another one of those things in our industry that stylists think, I think especially new stylists, I should say, they come into this industry, they think it's going to be fun, they're going to be able to make good money and be artistic, and they can take whatever they learn in cosmetology school and apply it right away. And I don't know about you, but I would say 95% of what I actually apply behind the chair now is from continuing education.
100%. I would say for me, probably 99% of it is from continuing education.
Like, listen, I went to a beauty school. So.
the only thing that you learn in beauty school is how to talk to strangers and sanitation.
Right,
I mean,
right.
in the whole scheme of things, yes, you learn a few basic things, but on your boards, all they give a fuck about is your sanitation, sanitation, sanitation. They don't care if you can roll a perm. They don't care if you can do a beautiful cut. They don't care if you can balayage. So
It's
every,
about connections.
yes. So almost everything I have learned has been on my own. And again, like I just remember getting out of school and I never wanted to assist somebody because like, oh my God, I'm like top of my class. I'm like such a good razor cutter. And like this, now when I went to beauty school, it was like Kelly Clarkson chunky highlight days. I was like, oh my God, I can like Kelly Clarkson anybody. I had a fucking ego when I got out of school. And as I got into the real world, I definitely got taken down a few pegs every day. I realized I don't actually know shit at all. And, you know, back then, of course, thinking of charging 175, I think I charged $95 when I got out of beauty school for a haircut, a highlight, a toner, a blow dry style. And that was done in an hour and a half. It's
And
not.
that was expectation then, though. I think with you educating people on social media, the expectations are being shattered a bit. And I think that that is just so admirable for you to be vulnerable like that and really show what it takes.
Well, and
And the fact you invested in yourself and your education to get to where you are today.
absolutely. And I say this, and I don't mean to be rude when I say this, but I'm no fucking different than anybody. And when this comes to my hair or my sobriety, I have been in deep, dark places. I have been fucked up. I have done some gnarly shit in my life. I have fried off fucking hair. So it's not like I came out of the womb with this natural talent. I have learned and I have fucked up so many times. But I've stepped back and I've reflected and I said, how the fuck do I not do this again? And so, you know what? I actually don't know how to do something. I'm going to take a class. I'm going to ask somebody. So it's having that motivation and that drive to want better. I've never wanted to be average. I've always felt there was something in me that was like, you got to do better. And it's a double-edged sword because with that comes the obsessiveness, the, oh my God, I'm a failure. You know, I didn't get likes. I didn't slay that hair. I'm going to quit hair. I say that to my husband. I can't even tell you how many times a week CNBC. I'm like, well, I fuck quit hair. I'm a piece of shit. I suck. I'm done. And he's like, let me guess, you screwed up hair and it's awful and they're never coming back and you're just the worst. And I'm like, yep, you got it. And then the next day I'm like, okay, so I was like being a little dramatic. It's fine. I'm not going to quit hair. But so even I have those thoughts. I'm human. You know, and you said something earlier about the vulnerability, and I actually used to think of vulnerability as a bad word. Like that is a word that I did not say, I didn't talk about because I was raised, feelings are, as my dad would say, feelings are for pussies. We don't talk about feelings, you bury them. And so I have anger issues because of it. Like I got into drugs and alcohol because I felt so many things that I didn't know how to deal with it. And so for me, just since I got sober 5 years ago, learning to be vulnerable, it is one of the toughest things I think that you will ever do as a human. Self-reflection, sitting in your yuck and being vulnerable. And over the last 5 years, I've really developed a thick skin. I'm very much hard and crunchy on the outside, but on the inside, I am gooey. I'm like just a egg when you crack it. I'm just goo. But I've had to develop a thick skin, especially putting myself on the internet with, you know, my journey of sobriety, talking about pricing. I have gotten more hate than I actually thought I would from these pricing posts. Every single day, I wake up to either DMs and or terrible, disgusting, mean comments on my posts. And To be really honest, most days I'm like, whatever, fuck off. You're just jealous, Karen. But I am human. And when you see that stuff repeatedly, it definitely has taken a toll on my mental health.
Oh, yeah. It must weigh on you.
I try really hard to not let it, but you know, people are really fucking rude. And if you guys get bored, and want to know some of the hateful comments, I don't delete them all. Some of them are just really disgusting and I do delete them, but any of my pricing posts, if you scroll through the 8 billion comments, there's a lot of mean, hateful shit on there. And at first I was like, kill them with kindness or just don't answer. And a lot of times I'll just say, thanks for driving up the engagement on my post. But lately I'm like, you know what? I'm just kind of fucking fed up with this shit. So I just say snarky things like, oh, I'm so sorry, Karen. Let me go get my manager. My manager's not available. I'll have my manager call you back, you know, but I can't personally fathom going onto someone's page and saying you, that took 8 hours. It only should have taken four, or you robbed that person, or there's no fucking way that was $300 worth of product. I could do it for 50 or, and I'm like, you people are so angry and you're so scared and you're so fearful that you project that onto complete strangers on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, hurt people hurt people. And so them saying something shitty about me or about my pricing is, it actually has nothing to do with me.
Oh, 100%.
And I have to remind myself that. And my husband has to remind me of that, because I can go to very dark places and I can get, I mean, I'm just sort of coming out of this brain fog of, you know, a couple weeks where I've been feeling really down and I'm like, is it worth it? Is it worth me putting myself out there? And I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, more good is coming from these posts than these trifling ass fucking bullshit haters. So keep doing what you're doing.
And I have to tell you, 100%, it is worth it from an outsider's perspective, because as somebody in the industry, it inspires me so much. And I know I'm not the only one. So,
see, and that's, oh, friend, that's the shit that, like, I'm going to cry. I'm not going to cry. That's why I wanted to do it. I want stylists to know, like, I don't care if you're from a small town. I don't care if you've had, you know, an abusive past, an addiction. I don't care what you have done. You are worth charging your value. And it's on us to band together, to talk about it, and to uplift each other, because people will try to tear you down. And the more successful you are, the more people try to tear you down. So you saying that, thank you. It really, it does make it all worth it, because at the end of the day, that is why I'm doing it, is to inspire other people, to challenge people, because you deserve to be paid and you deserve to be paid your fucking worth.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for being vulnerable with me. I think that it's just so cool to have you available to so many people, and especially to me right now. I'm so grateful for that. So thank you.
Thank you, friend.
I do want to touch a little bit about your success as far as, I mean, you have all these amazing accolades and you've done so many amazing things in the last 15 years, and you have a huge social media presence. And I'm curious about how you built that success. Like, how did you gain so many followers? Was it just kind of overnight, or did you really work on social media specifically? And I mean, we touched on it a little bit as far as, you know, the impact of your business in general, having this platform, but also your mental health and how it does impact negatively and positively, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do you ever want to just turn that bitch off?
Oh God, yes. So I didn't get into social media until I got sober, which is 5 years ago. So I was late to Instagram. People that I didn't know what a fucking hashtag was. I was like, why is everybody putting a pound sign? I didn't know shit, Sammy Sue, like not a fucking thing. And so, of course, because I don't know something, I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to learn. I'm going to take social media classes. I just kind of watched and emulated what people were doing. And I would take classes from independent educators, and they would talk about social media. And I was like, that's actually what I'm here for because I want to use this platform and I want to be big. And my why with social media has changed. When I first started, I was like, oh, it's cool. Let me show off my work. Look at what I can do. And as I kind of started building, again, I really had no idea what I was doing. I just thought, okay, this is a cool like portfolio, and I can basically show off. And I don't even think we had Instagram stories. Did we have Instagram stories 5 years ago?
I think so. I'm not sure. I was fairly new to social media about 5 years ago also.
I don't remember. Well, I wasn't using stories. I was just using my page. So as my sobriety progressed, so did my hair. My hair kept leveling up and leveling up. And so I would, even, 4 years ago, I can look back and be like, oh my God, I was doing these crazy makeovers. And that's sort of really what got people's attention is I would take people from black to silver. I would do these crazy, beautiful rainbows. And I was constantly on social media. So I had a goal. I would post. This sounds insane, but at the time I was like, I want to be somebody. I want to be a name in the industry. I want to get my name out there. So I would post like 5 times a day. I didn't know that your content needs to be entertaining, educational, emotional, whatever. I just was posting. And so what social media is, it's repetition, right? So people started to see me. And then I would do these makeovers and I would get noticed. And I will never forget my first Modern Salon repost. I fucking cried because I was like, I'm a big believer in writing down goals. And I look at those goals and I smash those goals. So one of my goals was to be in an industry publication, and Modern Salon was the first one to pick me up. And I cried and I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. And it was just a repost, right? And then I kept doing the social media. And my husband was like, you are never here when you are here. You are always on your fucking phone. You are always on Instagram. And I'm like, babe, I'm trying to build something. Like, I swear to fucking God, one day all this is going to pay off. I was constantly answering text messages from people who had seen me on Instagram. I was literally building my business on Instagram, and then people were asking me for advice and I would give it freely and constantly on my phone. And when I say we almost got divorced over Instagram, it is not a fucking lie. We were not doing good because I was constantly in my phone. So I had to like step back and think, okay, why do I want to use social media and how can I use it more efficiently? And so from inception of me beginning to use it's changed completely. Like I used to feel tied to my phone. I used to feel like, oh my God, I have to show up. I have to be on. I have to give the people Skittles and eggs and Gigi and make them laugh and make them cry. And now I'm like, I don't have to fucking do any of that. What I choose to give people now is post COVID world, it's definitely more guarded. I'm always truthful. I'm always blunt. I'm always honest. But I don't let people see every single fucking detail of my life anymore. And that has helped immensely with my mental health. I mean, there was a point where I was posting multiple times a day. I wouldn't miss a day. I felt like I couldn't miss a day. And now I'll go fucking week without posting, and I'll go 2 days without being on my stories. But it's funny because people are like, oh my God, hey, I'm just sending a message of love. I haven't seen you on social in 2 days. I just want to make sure you're okay. And I love that. But it's like, I realized for my mental health, I have to step back and I have to do what I need to do to take care of that. And that means not always being a fucking performer, not always being right. on, not always being fucking available, because social media, my phone should just permanently be glued to my hand. I'm always on it. And sometimes I put it on do not disturb. Sometimes I leave my phone in another room because it's hard. I'm addicted to my phone like so many people. But at the end of the day, I have to realize like social media is one aspect of my life. Yes, I have built an amazing, beautiful, organic following. I've never paid for a follower. I grew it the hard way. I mean, I've been doing it for almost 5 years and I'm only at 70,000, which is, it's not that much. You know, people I follow that have 700,000, 4 million, like I would love that, but I've grown mine organically. I have put in the fucking work and I have created a community of engagement. Mm-hmm. And I used to let the numbers define me. And I had to stop that because I was making myself miserable and I was making my poor husband miserable.
And how long have you guys been together? Tell us a little bit about your journey with Sheffy Lee.
So Sheffy and I have been together, January was 8, 9 years. Sheffy, fuck, how long were we together? I think 9 years. It's either 8 or 9. So I always ask people, I'm like, do you want the PG version or do you want the real version of how we met?
Well, I know the real version listening to you on the Hair Game podcast.
So
give us a quick rundown.
So I met my husband through a mutual friend and it turned out he was a drug dealer. I was on drugs at the time. So he became my drug dealer. We ended up, we were friends for like a year. And then I had this major crisis and he basically came to my rescue and, we have been inseparable. And when he proposed to me, I was like, yes, 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 absolutely. Yes. But, we have to get our life right. Like you have to stop selling drugs. And he's like, well, cool. If I stop selling drugs, that means you have to stop using. And I was like, okay, cool, cool. Like I could do that. And we did it. I mean, it's not as easy as that. I'll spare you all the gory details. But my husband and I just recently did a live that I posted on my page about, sobriety and, you know, our sober journey together. What it was like living with my husband is 2 years, ahead of me in his sober time. So he's 7 years, I'm 5 years. And just sort of our journey together, the bullshit that we've been through. You know, I never could have seen us getting to where we are today. When we met, my husband used to be a super big drug dealer, got kind of, you know, out of the game and was just kind of a small drug dealer when I met him. So, I had no clientele. I was running my business into the ground. I had recently been forced to sell my salon to my business partner because I was acting like a piece of shit and a drug addict. So when I say we had nothing, we had maybe $400 between the two of us. My car had gotten repossessed. Like we had fucking zero. And over the last 8, 9 years, through both of us working hard, you know, I've inspired my husband. He now has 2 titles at his job and he's opening his food truck, which has been his dream. You know, we just moved into this beautiful house that in a million years, I never would have thought that we would have a beautiful house, cars, multiple cars. Like it's insane to me how far we have come, but we have each other and he is my rock and my source of strength. And he inspires me every day. And I know I do the same for him. I have found my life partner and he motivates me and we keep each other honest. And I think that's one of the biggest successes of our marriage is our absolute honest bluntness with each other.
I love that so much. Not a lot of people have that. Like that's so.
Cause again, like being vulnerable is fucking hard. And even with somebody that you love, you know, I don't have a single fucking skeleton in my closet when it comes to David. I don't, you know, and I know he doesn't have any with me because we've been through shit. And through that shit, we learned how to communicate with each other. And it's like, he gets me at my best and my worst. And being vulnerable with each other is essential to having a successful, healthy relationship.
100%. 100%. Whether it's a relationship with your partner or friends or even your clients.
Absolutely. Right? Relationships across the board. Honesty and vulnerability always win.
100%. 100%. I love that you touched on that. So I definitely want to talk more about your sobriety. You've already kind of talked about you've been sober for 5 years. Your husband is sober. And in my experience in the beauty industry, kind of like most service industries, it does revolve pretty heavily around partying, right? Yeah. Like your alcohol. You always tend to go out with your staff, you know, after you're off work. Tell me a little bit about your experience as a stylist in this environment where drugs and alcohol are so normalized.
As a sober person, when I first got sober, it was so fucking hard. You are bombarded in this industry at hair shows, even at, you know, at work. At the salon I was at the time, we served our clients wine and beer. So I had access to that. So it's everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere in the world, but especially this industry. So for me, it was so fucking tough, Siamisu. It was so fucking hard. When I first got sober, I had to have, the owner of the salon, like lock up the wine. She would get my clients wine. She would get my clients beer. Because I didn't have the willpower. I didn't go, out. Like I stopped going to restaurants. I stopped going to bars. I stopped hanging out with people because I knew that if I went out after work, I was going to drink and I did not want to do that. Or I would do drugs and I did not want to do that. So I had a lot of support and I had a lot of help. I honestly, I could not have gotten and stayed sober by myself. So having a support group, whether it's AA, NA, your friends, your family, like whoever it may be, having that support it's essential to staying sober. And, you know, my first hair show as a sober person, I was working with a company and everything was shiny and loud and new. And oh my God, I was so excited to be there. And, you know, everybody went to dinner and everybody's having drinks and like that urge was there, but I was like, nope, nope. And one of the girls there said, do you want a mocktail? Like, will that make you more comfortable? And I was like, actually, yeah. And so she asked the server, can you make her a mocktail? And I was like, wow, thank you. And now I'm like, nope, I'm sober. Give me a fucking Sprite. Give me a water. But in the beginning, it was awkward. It was kind of weird. And I had to really focus and not get caught up in all that shit. Because there are companies, especially that are notorious in this industry for throwing, you know, ragers where everybody's doing fucking coke and, you know, getting fucking wasted. And, you know, that's all fine and dandy for other people. For me, that's not how I want to go. And I think you definitely have to have a friend, a support system, somebody to hold you accountable in those moments of weakness. And I think that there are, I know, I just saw Real Eric Vaughn said he had recently had 470 days sober. And so I think that there, and Rebecca Taylor just came out as sober. She went to treatment, and Rebecca and I lost our best friend Jason in September. And I think that was sort of a reality check for a lot of us. And it shouldn't be shameful to be sober. It should be something that you're proud of. And it should be something that we as an industry start to normalize instead of the fucking rock star party lifestyle.
Oh, for sure. It is weirdly taboo to be
Yeah,
here,
yeah.
right?
It's like, oh, okay. Well, you're too good for us. Well, if that's what you want to think, I don't care, you know. But it's, I don't.
And I mean, I think that response, that's about them, not about you, not
oh,
about what your choices
yeah,
are.
Absolutely. It's like, okay, well, sorry you feel that way. Goodbye. Yeah, but I feel like, I hope that, you know, and that's, I think that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that hairstylists in general aren't taken as a serious profession. If you talk to the average Joe, is yeah, you're a bunch of partiers. You drink, you do drugs, you fucking cut hair for a living. Like, whoop-de-doo, how hard is your fucking job? You know, you party at night, you cut hair during the day.
Right.
So again, I'd like to change that perception, and I know I can't do it alone. So I know for me, when I got sober, having Jason McDonald as my sort of sober mentor, someone who is in the industry, who does teach, who does go to events, who does go to hair shows and manages to stay sober. He was like a beacon of fucking light for me. You know, I had my husband at home and at work, and he's insanely supportive. And then when I would travel and go to these hair shows, like I had Jason because he's in the industry and he understands it. And it was like, we would duck out. We would make excuses. Like, you know, so it was nice to have that mentor, that accountability partner to help keep me sober when it was really hard in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great that you had him. And I'm just, my heart goes out to you so much for that horrific loss that you experienced in losing him. And I know recently you've really quite literally started pouring yourself into another art form outside of hair. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. I'm going to cry. Yeah. So when Jason passed in September, 2020 was a rough year for all of us. And in September, Jason died from an overdose. He lost his battle with addiction, and he's a piece of my soul. He literally had a piece of my soul. And I didn't know how to function. I mean, nothing mattered. It's like the world stood still. And I couldn't get out of bed. I was going through the motions, and I couldn't process how I was feeling. And I was angry and all of these things. And I was sitting at my kitchen island one day, a couple weeks after Jason passed. And one of my clients, who is an artist, had bought me this beautiful oil set and a canvas and an easel. And I was looking at it and I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to paint. I need to like keep my mind busy. And so I started painting. I've never, ever, ever in my entire life drawn, painted. I can't draw. My stick people look sick. It's disgusting. I'm not that an artist. Well, I didn't think I was an artist in that sense. And so I started like kind of painting, and I was like, oh, okay, like this is kind of fun. This is therapeutic. And so then I started like looking at art on Instagram, and I'd seen people pouring, like acrylic pouring. And I was like, now that looks fucking cool. So I went to Michael's on a whim, and I got some canvases and I got some paints. Didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing. And I just like started pouring. And I always have music going. Music is life to me. Music is my therapy. I live, eat, breathe, sleep by music. It's something that's in my soul. And when I was pouring, I had no music on. It was me in a room with my art and my feelings. And I had no idea how pouring on a canvas could literally be therapy and closure for me. When I say there is a piece of Jason in every art that I do, every piece of resin, every coaster, every tray, every piece of wall that goes on, or every piece of art that goes on someone's wall. There is a piece of Jason and the ripple effect that he had on so many people's lives is in that art. And it sounds so cliche and so corny, but I don't think I would be okay if I hadn't gotten into acrylic pouring and resin. I really don't think I would have been able to process everything. So my heart and my soul is in every single fucking piece of art that I pour. And it is very special and it is very sacred to me. And I am very grateful to my client, Heather, who gave me that easel because I it's not something I would have gotten into had it not been there.
That's beautiful. Do you think that having this artistic release has helped you to maintain your sobriety through this loss?
Yes, 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 yes. The first couple weeks that I was without Jason, I can't tell you how many phone calls or text messages I sent to my husband. And I said, I just don't fucking care. Like, I want to drink. I don't fucking care. I want to not feel anymore. And he was like, babe, you can't stay strong. I know this sucks. And he's literally my fucking rock. And I'm so fucking grateful for him. I put him through hell those couple weeks. And then I think when I found my art, it was like just this release of, I'm feeling something. I always say I'm feeling, but I can't always identify my feelings, right? I'm feeling something and I need to go pour. So I'm like, babe, I'm feeling some shit. I got to go pour. And it really helps me. I don't know if I'm actually working shit out or if it's just this like anxiety, panic feeling that I need to get out. It comes out on my canvases. I don't actually know the science behind it, but what I do know is that I fucking feel better now that I have an outlet, and I'm 100% positive between my husband's support and my art is what kept me sober after the loss of my best friend, sober mentor, who lost his addiction or lost his battle to addiction.
Wow, that's powerful. That's so amazing that your client was the one to kind of spark that inspiration and give you that outlet. That's so amazing.
It really is. I'm very grateful to her.
Do you have any advice to any like sober, curious stylists or, you know, people that are just listening to us?
I do. So I have people tell me all the time, like I could never stop drinking or I just drink, you know, I'm just a social drinker. The way I look at anything now that I am sober is if it does not add value to my life, I do not do it. So if you think you have a drinking problem, if you think you have a drug problem, if you think you have a gambling, shopping, whatever, if you think you do, you do. Now, what you do with that information is on you. So if something does not add value to my life, like I'm sober and I know sober people who smoke weed, I do not, because for me, it doesn't add value to my life. It doesn't make me, all it does is make me sit in the fucking couch and eat Cheetos, right? So I would never judge another person's sobriety or sobriety journey. It is yours and yours alone. But if it doesn't add value to your life, what is the fucking point? Life is so short. And we think it's not. We think we're going to be around 80, 90, 100 fucking years, whatever. I blinked and I'm 40. I don't know how that happened, but life is not as long as you think, and you never know what is going to happen. You just don't know. Every morning we wake up, we are lucky to wake up, and who knows what's going to happen that day. So I only choose to interact and have friendships with people, relationships that add value to my life. I only choose to participate in activities that add value to my life. And whether that's my mental health, you know, my bank account, whatever it may be. If it doesn't add value to your life, I would challenge you to ask yourself, why is it part of your life still?
Oh, I love that. That's so powerful. I 100% agree as a sober person myself. Once you make that decision to be sober, you have to continuously make that decision. And having that mantra kind of playing over and over in the back of your mind, I think is such a great way to hold yourself accountable and be able to stay strong even through some really, really tough times.
Absolutely.
So that's so cool. Awesome. So those are my main questions, but I do have 10 rapid fire questions that I want to ask. The cuff, here we go. Question number one, if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Oh, the power of invisibility.
Okay. Number two, fill in the blank. Being in the beauty industry is...
absolutely fucking amazing and hard and so much fucking work.
Okay, number three, share a salon experience that brings you pure joy to think about.
Mine would absolutely have to be my boss at the time, when she had the talk with me about calling me on my bullshit and asking me what the fuck was going on with me. And that was the day that I got sober from my salon owner.
Oh, love that. Okay. Number four, what would you do for a career if you were not in the beauty industry?
Fuck. I literally don't fucking know because I have tried everything. I don't know. I really don't have an answer for that one.
Cool. Love that. Okay. Number five, what's your favorite brand or company to work with?
So Tryonix. I have an affinity for small family owned companies, and Tryonix is that. They are my family. They took a chance on me when I was a fucking nobody. And 5 years later, I am their creative director. I spend a week with the family in New York every summer. It's not just about the products, it's about the relationships that you build. And Tryonix is the most amazing, kind, generous company / family.
Love that. Beautiful. Okay. Number six, if you could collaborate with anybody in the industry, who would it be?
Ted Gibson or Sambia?
You said Ted Yes. Gibson? Okay, cool. Okay. Number seven, what are you most grateful for today?
My sobriety.
Okay, number eight, if you could only use one hair product for the rest of your life,
why are you doing this to me? Oh my God, this is the worst question ever, Sammy Sue.
Okay, let's make it a little bit more general. If you could only use one hair styling product for the rest of your life, what would it be?
You are torturing me. Hair styling product. I'd have to say Olaplex 6 because it's multi-use and it is in the foundation of every head of hair I do.
Cool. Okay, number nine. Here's a scenario. You're busy as fuck behind the chair and you only have 10 minutes between clients, so you can't really eat a full meal. What's the power snack that you reach for?
Skittles. Duh.
Cool. Okay, number 10. If you could see any band or musician, dead or alive, who would it be?
Rick Ross, because he's my future ex-husband and he just doesn't know it yet.
Oh, that was the best. Awesome. Well, Sarai, thank you so much. I just want you to tell my listeners how they can find you on social media, Facebook, any and all ways to reach you really quick before we sign off.
On Instagram, I am The Platinum Giraffe. I also have an art page, Platinum Giraffe Art. On Facebook, which I'm never on, I'm Sarai Spear. And TikTok, which I don't even want to talk about that. It is Platinum Giraffe on TikTok. And I'm always on one of those social media platforms. And I'm that person, if you message me, I will answer you. I think that's why I'm constantly on my phone. I don't have anybody running my messages or anything. So if you message me, you are actually messaging me and I will respond to you.
I love that. You responded to me.
That's why we're here
for today. I appreciate you so much. You are my very first interview on Sammy Sue Loves Your Hair, the podcast. And I am just so grateful. And I hope you have a beautiful day. And hopefully we will be in touch again soon.
Sammy Sue, thank you so much for having me be your maiden voyage guest. You did an amazing job. I am definitely looking forward to hearing many more episodes because you had some dope ass questions, friend. So you killed this and it was my honor to be your first guest.
Thank you so much, Sarai. I'll see you on the flip side. Sarai, thank you so damn much for taking the time and energy to speak with me and be my very first guest on my podcast. You are truly an inspiration, and it's been an honor to get to know you just a little bit more. For those of you who would like to connect with Sarai, you can do so on Instagram at The Platinum Giraffe or via email at sarai@platinumgiraffe.com. And her name is spelled Sarai. Tune in next time for episode 3, when I interview a local Arizona stylist and salon owner, Amber Pope, on Sammy Sue Loves Your Hair, the podcast.